What is happening? Welcome to another episode of The Craft live in San Francisco. Thank you so much for everybody coming out tonight. Woo! Yeah.
Awesome.
Oh my God.
Live audience.
This is amazing.
Wow.
This is just an idea that, you know, and how I think literally we came up with it on the podcast.
Someone else did not laugh at the things I say. It's great.
I laugh all the time.
You're right.
Of course I do. Come on. But anyway, this is live from San Francisco. This is awesome. If you don't know this podcast, it's a pitching podcast. I'm your host, Nick Pollock. This is my special guest. Not a part of it. He just is so nice to join me often talking about pitching. Eno Saris, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me, and great to see you.
Oh, it's great to
Coming
see you,
all
man.
The way out here.
Oh my God,
sweaty San Francisco it upstairs is. At Garaje.
You know, it gets really cold.
Oh, thanks
tonight.
To Garaje for hosting
us. This is amazing
and making us sweat like this.
But what we're gonna do today, of course, is talk about pitchers. We don't know what. Honestly, this is just kind of how it rolls. But we have aces. In our hands.
That's right.
This is it, because this is what we do. We gotta have aces gonna ace every single time. And what better to talk about with aces? Eno, where are you right now? I gotta know this. On Bobby Miller and Walker Buehler.
Oh, actually, I'm super out on Walker Buehler. That one's easy because ever since enforcement, and ever since sticky stuff enforcement, he has A, not gotten the same shape on his fastball, and B, this is what I really noticed watching him lately, he cannot command his breaking balls.
No, he can't.
I don't know what it is. He throws that curveball in the dirt so often. Yeah. If I'm a hitter, I don't have to honor that curveball at all.
Right.
It's just donk, donk, donk in the dirt.
But the thing is, the thing I've been yelling at the entire year is just, the Dodgers, they don't know what an approach is. They just kind of throw it down. Here's your stuff. You just throw it there randomly. It actually wasn't a bad approach last time out.
It was more cutter curve. Yeah. It was like a cutter curve
and
idea.
Then four seamers are actually like upstairs. It wasn't just, hey, random ones. And it still wasn't good.
Well, that was against the Orioles, right?
Yes.
So at least it was a good team. I thought he looked a little bit better. I just think he's like a matchup starter, like in terms of fantasy.
Can he even do that, though?
It might blow up in your face.
Right?
Who is that? There was a, I think, an Indian starter that was cutter curve that had terrible command.
Like way back in the day.
I can't remember his name right now.
All I think of is Masterson. It's just always Masterson is the answer.
Yeah, that's the answer.
It's just always, oh gosh, what a guy. But no, then there's Bobby Miller on the other side. Were you encouraged at all the last two games?
I mean, the stuff looks good. I think he just needs to get right. He said, and this is what really I think has been going on. I thought it was still the shoulder. He said after the game, no, my knee hurts.
Right.
And my theory about command is that you have to basically feel at your best to have your best command.
Sure.
And that it kind of goes away quickly. When you're talking about something hurting, you can still throw 97, which he's doing,
right.
But you can't put it exactly where you want it. I don't think that there's real evidence that he has terrible command, like through the minors and through last year.
Yeah.
It's just right now he has terrible command. I'm betting on him next year, not this year.
Absolutely. Yeah. But here's the thing. Even if your knee hurts, you could still throw a slider. Like, you threw three of them. And guess what? They were good. They're like down and away for a whip. It was beautiful at 88. And then, he hung one that was a lineup. And then he got another for a strike. I was like, I'm good. That's it. It's only my best pitch. I'm just going to throw three times.
Well, speaking of aces not throwing sliders enough, Corbin Burns.
Oh, man.
You know, he's doing the cutter. Wait, he's doing the curve.
Eno.
He's doing the change.
You know, did you see the last game? Did you see what happened?
What? Three curveballs in a row to Teoscar Hernandez?
No.
Yeah, yakety-yak.
No.
That's what I saw.
You know, this has blown my mind. Okay, Corbin Burns this year, he's lost 2 inches of drop on his cutter. Okay? And a big thing I've been saying about the cutter is that it's too lofted. It's not that big swing strike rate. It used to be like sub 10% this year, as opposed to like sticky stuff fine, 17%, but still like 13%, still like the pitch for him, right?
Uh-huh.
And he lost 2 inches of movement. That makes sense. That's why it's not as low, because that's 2 inches you're not getting as
right,
much.
Right, right.
It went from
a 12.
Is that some of
the swing strikes?
Yeah, right. And then it would add up to that as well. But here's the thing. The season, I'm going to show you right now, okay? You look at stuff. You see that he has an IVB of 12.4, right? That is how much drop he has normally. It's like 10.5 or so on it. Look at the stuff on the cutter from the last game. Look at this. Do you see that number?
Wow.
Do you see? What is it? What are you seeing, Eno?
7.7. So you think he's back?
That's 5 inches. Bam. More drop. And guess, look where it was, Eno.
Well,
look.
One thing I'm really worried about is heart factors for these sort of things.
Down.
I want to see two games of this.
He had 10 whiffs at 41.
I want to see two games of this. There are park factors for movement.
That movement? 7.7.
All right.
That's 5 inches.
Well, I mean, if I could gift him something, it would be a really great slider he could command, because then I think he would be a true four-pitch pitcher.
Well, right, but I mean, like, he was, like, throwing, like, 60% cutters in his heyday.
That's right.
Right? And, like, that is the pitch that has just not been what it used to be. This year, that cutter is at a 9% swing strike rate.
So he throws three straight it's like four out of five pitches to Teoscar Hernandez were curveballs. One of them, Teoscar Hernandez fouls off.
Right.
He goes right back to the exact same spot with the curveball, and Teoscar Hernandez hits it for the next time up. He goes cutter slider to Teoscar Hernandez and strikes him out on four pitches.
And here's the funniest thing too. I've been saying this for ages on Corbin Burns, and it's been fine because he's been so good. But his swing strike rates on his slider have been always amazing.
But I don't think he can command it that well.
I guess, but he throws it like, I mean, he's doubled its usage this year. It was 8% last year, now it's at 15%.
Yeah, but I don't think he can command it, or it blends with his cutter or something, because it's something where you're like, why don't you throw this pitch 25% of the time?
I know. He's trying, he has to more because the cutter hasn't been as effective, but like 7.7, I've never seen that. That's a real legitimate increase of a drop out of nowhere.
Speaking of aces, I got a question the other day. Bowden Francis or Jared Jones?
Oh, Jared Jones.
Yeah, okay, thank God.
Who is this person?
Sometimes the hype machine gets going. No, I mean, but you do like Bowden Francis.
Well, okay, so actually I was tempted to, I'm so glad you brought him up because I saw you talked about him today and on Twitter, and I was almost going to reply to it. Do you get this feeling? You must. Like, watching a pitcher, and you just go, how? Every single time they throw it, it's like, oh, there's an out. Like, how? And then it's a fifth inning, and it's like, oh, wow, he has one hit? I'm looking at my watch. Oh, one hit. Wow, that's amazing.
I think that's just a heater.
That's
pitcher version of a heater. God. I mean, there's no way. He's doing hit suppression in a way that you can't believe.
Well, his IVB is at 18 inches. That's the thing. I'm watching it, and the Red Sox are popping up all of these in the zone. It's like a 2-0 fastball. Like, oh, there's a pop-up out. And that's how you get into that rhythm of, like, going six innings, is you get those outs in 2-0 counts.
Yeah, that's true.
Right? That doesn't turn into a strikeout 3-2
really good shapes on all his pitches.
Yeah.
I just wish he threw them all harder.
Well, they're bad, though. Like, the cutter and the slider and the curve are not good.
They're decent shapes, but they're like 78 and 81.
And the other one's like hurled around this way. Like, so many times I see Bowden Francis throw a curveball, and it's just out of the hand. Like, oh, that's going away over there. Thank you. Goodbye. Next one. You know? It's not. It was just him fastball. And the splitter, as you mentioned on that tweet, was he's better now, but it's not that, like, Gausman, like, okay, this is what I do now. It was the previous game, this last one against Fenway, so much. Fastball's at 92. Well, thank you so much. That worked out. I'm so not a believer in this.
Well, we've talked a lot about splitters, and I know that you don't love them much, or you love them. They're fine. As a third or fourth pitch, they're fine. They can't command them. Is one
we
of
the have a complicated
say.
Relationship.
We talk about this a lot. I know, but there was a question after Bowden Francis, like, is this an underrated pitch? I was just talking with Garrett Crochet, and he was like, I can't throw the splitter. My elbow hurts when I throw it.
Oh, no.
And so I do think, you know, this is one thing that we've studied, and I've tried to look it up, and you cannot find a strong link in the numbers. Like, data-wise, you cannot find a link between injuries in this pitch. Well, however, you have pitchers telling you, it hurts when I throw it, and you can't ignore that. So I think it's not a pitch that can become the next sweeper that everyone's throwing, because it's going to hurt some guys, and they just can't throw it. So, Crochet, I would love to give him a good changeup. He doesn't have one. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be a splitter. He did say, maybe I'll try it this offseason. If that's why he's hurt next year, you know why.
It's like the Tyler Glasnow changeup, right? That will always be the Chris Archer one, you know? Oh, yeah, I'm going to get a changeup this year.
Oh, my God, Chris Archer.
Brady Singer changeup, you know? Like, oh, my God. The Hunter Green splitter. It's going to work out. Some guys just aren't good. Throw him with a ring finger for a circle change, right? And that was me.
Oh, yeah, speaking of which.
What do we got?
I was just at the ballpark.
Oh, yeah,
and
you were.
I got to talk to Edward Cabrera.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if everyone's going to be able to see this, but at least for the people at home, I'm going to show him modeling his changeup grip. And Justin, you're going to have to tell me when he's done modeling it. Have you can see the grip? Okay. So the thing that that really stands out for me is, look at those mitts. I mean, this guy's got fingers, dude. This guy's got fingers. I don't know if you can see the fingers. I mean, these are like Pedro Martinez fingers here.
It's like you holding a golf ball.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right? And so, I think that maybe the key to the changeup, people talk about choking the velo out of it, choking, you know, choking the ball a little bit.
Right, of course.
One of the first changeups you'll ever throw as a kid is the palm ball.
Yeah.
You know.
Which is really just holding a baseball. Because you're a kid.
Right. But I also think that, like, kids all think they have a good changeup, but I've seen them, and they're not good. And I think part of it is their hands are not...
I've seen all these kids. Yeah. Hey, that's a bad changeup, kiddo. Yeah. Get them out!
Well, no. I mean, you can watch the Little League World Series, and
every pitch is a changeup then.
They'll have great curveballs. Like, some of their breaking balls look really nice, but I've never seen a really great changeup in Little League World Series.
I think starting at 11, I threw a curveball.
Oh, nice.
But the thing is, I threw a sweeper.
Oh.
Because I didn't like, if you're throwing
and
a
your
curveball.
Your elbow's still intact.
I know, right? It's amazing. This actually goes back to the whole thing about elbows hurting and stuff, because it's all about form. It's all about what works with your delivery, right? So if you are coming out properly or so, it's not going to be good for certain grips and so on and so forth. So for me, I actually, like, you have the traditional pop the gun, which is your middle finger going out over on the right side of the horseshoe. And all I did was I just threw a fastball normally, but like a slider grip.
Nice.
But a sweeper is that. Sweeper really is.
You might even split it around that.
Right. You're essentially just getting on the side. Like, Rich Hill throws a sweeper because he throws a curveball, but down low. So he changes it from over the top with the curve and then just puts it 90 degrees over. Yeah. Right?
He's just throwing a sideways curveball.
Right. Which is a sweeper.
Yeah, right.
But it
doesn't hurt him, I don't think, arm-wise, because it's natural. His natural
it's
slot.
Just going straight. Yeah. And so
he's
when
not
I.
throwing the pizza box.
Yeah. Oh, God. Throw the pizza. Oh, man. That guy, I could not believe he was doing that. So I threw it straight over the top like this. And every single time, it would just come back over. And all these kids at 11 were like, what?
So, you have these, you have a mitt.
I've got hands.
You got hands, you got fingers.
Yeah.
So, did you have a good changeup?
No.
Oh, okay.
Because
that theory.
No, well, the thing is, though, I mean, you should. But I only knew a circle change, that's all I was taught. And I can't throw my ring finger. I hated that.
And that's what, if you saw the video, Edward says it needs to come off his ring finger.
Yeah, I can't do
that.
So
you need to have some strength. You need, like, if you want to put that anywhere, I know, Edward Cabrera doesn't command the ball, so he's not like the paragon.
I think he does, though. It's so weird. I know it sounds like he doesn't, but like, he throws his secondaries for strength much better than others.
Fine. Yeah, yeah. It's his fastball command. It's really bad.
Yeah.
That's it's so like wild. Birdsong. Birdsong says the reason he can command his breaking balls is because he's out here and he's got that release point. I think so. Better than his fastballs.
I mean,
his fastball spray chart is.
I know, my God.
Jackson
yesterday, and I know him. No, I saw last night. I think it was 8 for 17 strikes on the curveball.
Eight. That's not good. That's not a good number.
Would be above at least 50%, if not like 60% on these, right?
Yeah, actually, our Little League coach has a rule that you have to throw 50% strikes on your fastball in the bullpen before he'll ever put you in a game.
Really?
Yeah.
So the kids there are throwing 149 for 301, you know? Yeah. So I'll still go out there, Johnny. But really, when it comes to having large mitts, you certainly are able to do that kind of changeup better because.
I mean, I just think of Pedro Martinez.
Right.
Martinez.
You just
had
go
that.
Further in.
Yeah.
You know, and when you think of a changeup versus a fastball, you're taught. You want the least amount of your hand to touch a baseball because that is what's holding it back.
Right.
So you want to be as loose as possible on the very tips of your fingers. You don't want to make it fully knuckle, but you want it to completely come out easily, no resistance. And then the further back it is, the more resistance you're going to add. It's going to be slower and you look the same.
That's like choking the velo.
Right. So if you have large fingers, you can actually do that without getting into the palm.
I wonder if there's also
do it down there.
An aspect because he's talking about in his video, he's talking about wanting to get on top of the ball and getting out in front.
Right.
And I feel like that might be easier if you have bigger
hands. That's a good point.
You know, like if I'm trying to get out in front, I just don't have as much finger out there.
Right.
You know. So.
Yeah, you should tell them to get longer.
Yeah.
You're like, come on, guys, let's do this. But no, with like a split finger, for example, right? I would throw this one, and which I don't know how many guys have shown you this one. This is my favorite one.
I love it with the seam in the middle.
Right. So
I don't have a name right now.
Well, the thing is, I would put it on the seam in both sides of my index and my middle, so I would feel more comfortable with it than the bolt of the ball.
Interesting.
So I felt I could actually get to this more often.
Maybe command it a little bit.
Right. But it actually turns into a bit of a fork, unless I then pull it in more.
Yeah, the wider this goes, the more this ball pops out.
Right, and does a
hump. You kill the spin, and then like has uncontrollable.
Right.
This is why you think nobody can control their splitters.
Well, because I know that people can.
You threw that.
No. I know the difference. I added, this was the fork version.
All right.
And then you get further in, and that's the splitter version.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, because I now want more of the bulge end, of course, than limiting on the tops of my fingers.
But theoretically, somebody who threw a splitter where they weren't as deep in the fingers as
100%.
That could control it better.
Absolutely.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
The
idea.
All
degrees. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
It's all black and white. I mean,
black and white, Nick Pollock hates splitters. You heard it here. Evidence number 3,566.
Yeah, but, you know, it's a relationship. You got to talk to it. You got to ease into it. You got to see, you know. Is this
Were you a big talk to the ball, talk to the glove on the mound guy?
Duh.
Yeah.
Everyone does. Anyone that says they don't.
You were a future podcaster on
Absolutely.
The mound.
I talked to the bowling ball. You know?
Just give me this one right now.
Just like, hey, me and you.
Me and you. Look at me. Here we go.
Oh man. But no, really, just to finish the thing where they were
God,
Carrera.
It's a sauna.
It's so hot.
Jesus.
We're doing it for you.
Woo. I am sweating. Jeez.
Just to finish that thought of Eric Cabrera, there, with every pitcher too, it's about.
I wonder if those mitts hurt under the command.
They might. It might feel like you have more things involved in touching it, so that you can't
it's
really
way out
it.
There.
Right. Well, it's like, I guess what I'm getting at is the reason I can only throw my index finger. I need always involved is my brain is when I'm thinking about holding the baseball and releasing it, I'm going to the very tip of my index finger. I know it sounds
your
crazy.
Your brain is in the
right.
tip of your neck.
I'm like hyper focused to the nerves in this.
I mean, you know, with men, it's better than there.
This is a family friendly
somewhere
podcast.
Else.
You know, please.
Thinking with
public.
Index finger. All right. I got it.
But no. Oh, it might be a good time for a question. I can't.
What's
no.
that science like phrenology or whatever? It's like
that's of the brain.
You have,
and
like,
the
you have a really
guy.
Big index finger.
This is where science is, yeah. And this is where the arts are.
Yeah.
But no, the idea of like let's say when you're writing with a pencil or something like that, right? Or a pen, you're feeling the connection there as you move around, right? You're very pronounced on that part of it. So when I would release, even when I'm shooting a basketball or so, it'd be like the moment I release the ball.
I really want off my middle finger.
Right. And you're thinking mentally, if you actually like go back to like think
that
about
one
those
just
shots,
felt, it would come off straight if
right.
it came off my middle finger.
And you would feel, you'd be like, even to the very last moment you're touching the ball, you have such a hyper sense.
And not everybody has longer middle fingers than index fingers? Or
I mean, I think so. Your middle finger is supposed to be the longest one.
Okay.
You're normal.
You're good. You. In at least one way.
Oh, man. All right. We're going to talk about more pitchers, and we're going to take some questions from the crowd. We're going to do that right after this break. Which doesn't exist because we're live. So,
yeah. Jeez. I could go take a shower.
All right. We'll start taking some questions to the audience because we really want to get you guys involved. And thank you so much for being here. Anyone, raise your hand. We'll give you one of these mics. Ask any question, any pitcher, and you're going to get Eno and me to give our 2 cents on that guy. Come on forward. Come on up.
There you go.
Say your name.
Hi, my name is Andy.
Hey,
I just
Andy.
Had a question about Mackenzie Gore.
Yeah, oh gosh.
The results have been...
Terrible.
Yeah, terrible. Considering he's like a first-round pick. I think third overall pick. I don't remember. I know his fastball is rating really high in these stuff models. Is it just a lack of secondaries issue? Is there something else that's maybe
that's really
problematic?
Oh, man. I just want to mention really quickly. I think like a month ago we did a podcast about second half guys. And I was like, my favorite one is Mackenzie Gore.
Uh-huh.
And the instant at the end of the podcast, I was like, that was terrible. I'm going to hate this so much. Ain't no convincing me the other way completely.
I think I probably said Taj Bradley, who is in the middle of blowing up right
oh,
now.
Oh, is he really?
And I think the similarity there is that both of them have really good fastballs.
Yeah.
And you're sort of waiting for that feel for spin or that like secondary that they can really believe in.
Yeah.
And you think, oh, this splitter for Bradley or, oh, like this the curveball for Gore. You know that Gore thinks that he's very close to Clayton Kershaw in terms of mechanics and movement and stuff. And
okay.
So he wants to throw Clayton Kershaw's curveball, and he'll look at Clayton Kershaw's curveball and slider and try to model his against that.
Really?
And that may sound silly because he doesn't have anything like Kershaw's command, of course, but that is kind of what Stuff Plus is doing, you know? It is kind of looking at release points and saying, okay, you know, this is what other pitchers with these kind of release points have done. It doesn't seem crazy, but this goes to an age-old debate for me, which is, if you had one thing from a pitcher, would you rather have a great fastball or feel for spin?
Ooh.
If you got both, you got an ace, I think.
Yeah.
If you have one, you have a guy who will sort of struggle along. And,
so would you rather have Gavin Williams or Zach Littell?
No, Tanner Bibee.
Tanner Bibee. Oh,
Tanner Bibee.
Right.
Feel for spin. Feel for spin versus Todd Bradley or Mackenzie Gore with a better fastball. I think my answer is usually better fastball, but there have been more and more guys like Kyle Harrison here locally that have had great fastballs and have just... You're just like, I don't think he's ever going to add a second pitch. Like, I don't think it's ever going
to
work.
Well, I mean, I think there needs to be a caveat in there of quality of command. Because a lot of the guys have a feel for spin that includes command on top of the stuff, right? And but then
and Harrison, Bradley.
Harrison's kind of weird about
it's
it.
Not
but then
great
it's,
command.
It's better
Gore's
than
Gore's command is bad.
Yeah, that's really the main thing I'd say about Mackenzie Gore is that, first of all, we saw that he needed the velocity change to have an effective one. Because we saw him at 95 and it wasn't quite the same. And then you need the secondaries to actually come off of it.
Who has a plus-plus fastball and great command, though? Is there something about having great vert or having great movement on your fastball or great velo? Garrett Cole.
Yeah.
Garrett Cole.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
But he also has a pretty decent feel for spin. So, like, he's more an example of, like, that's a complete package. Is there a young player?
I mean, Garrett Crochet.
Okay, great fastball, feel for spin?
And not really a feel for spin, but that's my point, is that you can get by with an amazing fastball that doesn't really have, like, the best secondary stuff, too. Uh-huh. As long as it's good enough fastball, then you're good. So Mackenzie Gore at, like, 97, and he had all the good Fantastic Four metrics, right? Velocity, extension, verts, and height-adjusted VA is all there, but he's not dominating with the fastball first, being like, hey, hit this here, like Bailey Ober spotting at the top of the zone. And that actually would make his secondaries better, right? But he doesn't, it's just kind of varied. Some days he has it, some days he doesn't. I don't know about the Nationals as a pitching crew. In the past, it hasn't been great. So I feel like a lot of times, a lot of guys go there, they have good moments, and it's fleeting because they don't have ways to keep it up. They don't have the people around them to keep it there. So, I don't know. I want to believe so badly.
Okay. Okay. So, pitchers under 26, starting pitchers with 30 innings, sorted by four-seam fastball. Jared Jones.
Yeah.
Luis Gil.
Sure.
Taj Bradley, Mackenzie Gore, Hunter Green.
Right.
Bryce Miller.
Bryce Miller.
Hey, there you go.
Shane Boz.
No,
Nick Lodolo. Ryan Pepiot.
Nick Lodolo.
Ryan Pepiot, Bobby Miller, pick one.
Your champion.
Bryce Miller is the one that's like doesn't have the feel for spin.
Does not have a feel for spin.
Yeah.
Jared Jones has a feel for spin.
Yeah, he does. Jared Jones is so good.
I think I'm picking Jared Jones.
Yeah, completely.
Yeah.
I mean, have all of these guys moving forward?
These are the best young fastballs. Brown, I can put Spencer Swan back. Cole Reagans is there.
No. I mean, Strider, right. But
Strider's not on here for
I kind of would say Ryan Pepiot in there, man.
I really like Ryan Pepiot.
And now the Trop thing is messing me up, if you don't
but
know.
But he does not have the natural command, but at least he has.
It's like he does it in pockets.
Yeah.
And, like, you can actually see. I mean, there's something about that, too. You watch Mackenzie Gore, and it's rare that I see him just, hey, cool, I've got my thing. Putting this here. I'm doing that here. I'm doing this here. Oh, and I missed that one. Don't worry. I got the next one. It's going to be here, right? That's not really a common thing. I've seen that with Pepiot.
Well, another thing that was interesting that Pepiot told me was that the Rays tested him for if he was a pronator or supinator. So pronator is a little bit more like, you know, kind of window shades, this side of the ball. Supinator is more this side of the ball. And he said that the Rays told him after this test that he was great at both. I love these moments of frankness with players. Like, it's cool for me to call Jake Berger a donkey. Like, he was totally cool with it. So, Ryan Pepiot was totally.
Why were you calling him a donkey?
Well, I said, did you always have great bat speed, or did you do weighted bats, or have you just been a big old donkey that hits the ball hard?
What?
And then I was like, oh, did I just say that? and he did not blink one bit.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
And he didn't even address the donkey in the room. He was just like, yo, my dad was a D1 player. He threw me really firm batting practice.
It sounds like you felt like you were the donkey in the room.
Yeah, well, I thought I'd really let one out, but
there you go. He's great.
Turn out my farts smell good.
Family friendly podcast.
Yeah, they are. I mean, you should see how much my family farts. Jesus Christ.
Okay, we're going to change the topic really quickly.
But Ryan, I wonder what this test was, you know, in terms of, like, what do they do to be like, oh, yeah, you're good at both of these
things. I was
things.
Just thinking to myself, like, can you do this?
Yeah.
And they, like, do write down on the clipboard. Yeah, so, yeah.
Nice fart. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. You see that?
No, okay, it's wait, the race. So what like, oh, about...
can pull down 3 inches this way, and you can pull down 4 inches that way.
Are they just, like, doing weights?
Yeah, they're little weights. Okay, take this weight and take your hand and go like this.
Oh, my gosh. But no, I mean, but Pepio, though, like, he was an 80-grade changeup in the minors, which I had never seen.
And it's still there.
And then the slider actually is a good slider.
Yeah.
And then his fastball had all this vert, and they got more in, again, with the race, but not just...
It's not
just a
like
drop,
a great slider. I think his changeup is a better pitch.
Oh, yeah.
He throws like a gyro that, like, if he's throwing at 89, it's a good pitch.
It's amazing.
If he's putting it where he wants to put it, yeah, it's a good pitch. It's not, I think, by itself an amazing.
Oh, it's not like a Kyle Bradish, Dylan Cease.
Yeah, it's not like one of those amazing.
Well, I mean, I think of it more of, hey, you have this heater that is, this is a tier. You don't need, I mean, I honestly like the difference between, like, the Bradish slider and that slider.
You just
need
something
needs.
That went that way.
Yeah. Yeah. And really underneath. Yeah. Because this is going that way with the heater, and that goes there,
yeah.
And then changeup's going there. It's he's so good.
No, I think I'm tempted with Pepio, but man. Jared Jones, at least by Stuff Plus, has a really good changeup. So he hasn't gotten to it.
Oh yeah,
maybe
he does throw it so
maybe
every
he
so
can't
often.
Command it.
Is it better than Spencer Strider's?
Yes, by shape.
Okay.
And by potential.
It was very aggressive the way.
No. I think no. Spencer Strider has been trying, and I want to pat him on the head.
I was just saying the way
the
that
the curveball
you're
and the change saying. Are not good.
No, I know. No. I'm with you. No, the way that you said shape was like, oh God, I'm sorry. I didn't.
Yeah.
No. Anyone else have a question they want to ask right now? We want to make sure he gets them. Yeah.
Not about a specific player, but more of a group of players. Converted reliever starters. It seems like this year, coming into the year, we had a good amount of them. Now that we're at the end of the year, what's your take on the performance this year, and do you see teams trying to do this more in the future?
That's an awesome question. What's your name?
James.
James. Oh, James.
Thanks for that
is
James,
really
yeah.
good. I know Eno's going to have a million smart thoughts, so I'm just going to say this quickly. It's weird to see them turn into starters and change their mechanics along the way. We saw that with Puck, and we saw that with Hall. And it's actually kind of cool right now with Hall. I think going tonight against Brent Lauder, which is really fun. I can't wait to watch that. He's actually gone back to the same arm angle he had as a reliever now, right? And he was trying to get it higher up to get a better breaking ball. So I it's kind of interesting. You might see guys change and embrace it. Maybe velocities drop and guys are noticing that. But then there's Garrett Crochet. And the thing is that Garrett Crochet exists. Thus, it will continue to be a thing that teams focus on.
I mean, it's been really successful, other than Puck. I mean, I can't believe you brought him up. Yeah, that's the one that really didn't work out. But
Jared and Hicks, kind of?
I thought Hicks was fine. I mean, for what they wanted, what they spent on him, what they got out of him, I thought it was fine. And I think he's still interesting going forward. But what is really interesting to me is, like, I was talking to Grant Holmes, and he said, they put me in the bullpen, and I threw harder. And then when they put me back in the starting rotation, I just threw harder. Like, I just kept being a reliever. And what we're seeing across the league is more like the relieverization of starting pitching. And there's more just like, hey, throw as hard as you can for 4 or 5 innings, and then we'll take the ball from you.
Right.
So I think it becomes more viable in today's age because you're like, oh, yeah, the starters are acting like relievers. So we can just find a reliever that has, a wide array of pitches, Ronaldo Lopez. I was going to say you need command.
Yeah.
You need command, but Hicks and Ronaldo Lopez don't have great natural command.
But, I mean,
they just have wide. They have wide arsenals.
Yeah, and they also have, they're throwing up strikes, though. Like, the fastball is, he's just, instead of trying to pinpoint it, he's just like, all right, fine.
So I have a name for next year, Griffin Jacks. That's my guy.
Wait, he was a starter.
He was a starter, but since then, he's added more pitches.
Uh-huh.
He hasn't even gone to, in his words, hasn't even gone to work on seam shift awake on his changeup. So he has a little bit more he can do on his changeup, I think. But he now has fastball, sinker, slider, and a slower slider or curve.
Yeah,
I think it's enough, and I think there's some potential in that changeup. And there might be a need in Minnesota. They may look at their starting rotation next year and say,
well, right.
We need something more.
I mean, I think it's also more interesting is a lot of starters that should be relievers, right? I mean, I'm looking at, like, Paddock. They tried that one, too, a little bit, and I'm not enthused. But
or there's probably people
before.
Who thought, like, maybe Jared Jones might be ahead of there, like these two-pitch guys.
Right, but they're clearly showcasing you can be a two-pitch guy. It's just that they're both great. That's great, you know?
Sadly, our boy Joel Boyle is now a reliever.
Oh, is he actually now?
Yeah, that's what they decided.
No, he's been a reliever the whole time.
He's been, This is, to your point, you know, there's kind of like, you know, another way of saying it is they used to have it that starters started basically like 6 out of every 9 innings. And over the last few years, what we found is we're at a point where starters are like 4.7 innings.
Yeah.
And the relievers, you know, or 5.3, and the relievers are 4.7. Like, they've optimized the game almost strategically to the point where you're getting equal amounts out of your starters and relievers, and that means a lot of things for how people act.
Yeah, I mean, really quickly, how do you feel about the whole baseball trying to make 6 innings happen for starters? Do you have a better solution? Do you think it's going to work out?
I think it's a terrible idea if they just implement it, because at the type of pitchers that you're going to force to go 6 innings, they're not the type of pitchers you want to see more of.
Yeah, sure.
It's generally the bad pitchers that are out early. And then there's a lot of people where, like, oh, our guy Yoshinobu Yamamoto is ready. He can do 4 innings in the majors. You know, do you want to see 4 innings of Yamamoto in the majors, or do you want to force him to stay in the minors longer so he comes up with 6? So there's a lot of like rehabbing or relievers turn starters that are in between.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think if they said 5 years from now we're going to do this, I would still hate it because it's kind of just it's what I like rules that incentivize things.
Yeah.
And this is a rule that just brute forces something.
Sure. I would say, I mean, I haven't found a good argument against my proposition, which is 2 rules. 1, you have to have a 6-man rotation. And 2, if you start a game, you cannot pitch again until the 7th game.
That's basically it. The enforcement of the 6-man rotation.
Right. It's right. But it's essentially saying you can't have an opener. Right? So you're saying that you pitch 1 game, you cannot pitch again until 7 games later.
Wait, all pitchers?
Whoever starts that game.
Starts, okay.
So that means it gets rid of the opener.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's a reliever you have to use multiple times. It means that you don't have to throw X amount in a game.
You know, one thing that this does, though, in terms of small markets and big markets, is that it'll widen the gap between big markets and small markets.
Sure.
Who can afford to spend on 6 starters and who can't?
Sure.
You know, that'll happen with 6 innings, too. In fact, I was just at the Sabre Analytics Conference, and they said, what do you do if you put 6 innings in, you put the 6 inning rule in, and you're the Tampa Bay Rays? He goes, well, you look at the loopholes. What do you do with the loopholes? 100 pitches. Wow, we could just optimize for 100 pitches instead of 6 innings.
Right.
So our team is going to be incredibly inefficient.
Yeah,
and we're going to have 100 pitches in 4 innings and get a lot of strikeouts, have a fair amount of walks, and not improve the look and feel of the game at all, but make it affordable for us Tampa Bay Rays to bang with the big boys, because we are not going to have 6 guys who can go 6 innings.
You know, why do you think Blake Snell was only able to go 6 innings for so long? Oh, because he was horribly inefficient.
Yeah.
That's what it was. And then he had the Rays hitter, and then he's like, whoa, look at me, I can do it. Like, well, thank you, finally.
But the Rays would have a lot of Blake Snells.
Yeah, right. Oh, no. Not a bad thing.
I mean, it's just the dumbass thing that happens when you have these like ham-fisted rules, and like there's like little fine print, and everybody, every guy in every analytics department is reading the fine print and be like, okay, we're just gonna fake injuries.
Yeah. Well, didn't the Mets get in trouble for that though? Like, finally something happened, so maybe they will stop it for everybody.
Maybe.
I just want to hope. Okay, I'm an idealist.
I don't think that ended.
Yeah, fair enough.
Still happening.
We had a question over here before. You want to ask it now?
Hi, I'm Theo, and my question was, there's a previous episode of The Craft, you're talking about the importance of arsenal diversity as kind of a, not just the kitchen sink thing, but what's the value of an extra pitch?
Yeah, sure.
I saw Brian Manister talking about how people with 90 to 85% spin efficiency fastballs are way more likely to be able to add more pitches, in particular because the seam effects on a 4-seam and a 2-seam at 85% are much more pronounced than they are near closer to 100%.
Yeah.
So do you think we're going to see a prioritization of people with slightly less efficient fastballs and more arsenal diversity as we're looking into the future of pitching development at the minor league?
Oh, man. So many good questions.
I think that's happening.
Yeah.
That's happening. It can go bad. John Gray.
Oh.
John Gray has like the perfect fastball. We were like, oh, this guy we can make into a sinker cutter change guy with seam shift. And then you're just like, oh, your fastball is that way because you can't do these things.
Yeah.
So there is probably some sort of higher order sort of mechanical analysis you can layer on top of that. But I do know that the 85% spin efficiency guys have been put into the cutter, sweeper, sinker bucket. That's the Clark Schmidt, Hayden Wesnensky. Like, there's a, you know, Jameson Tryon tried to join the group. There's a whole sort of part of baseball that's going that way.
Yeah.
I don't know if you want to prioritize it. It goes back to our old question that we just had, which is, like, if you had this great fastball and didn't have these other pitches, would you rather have the great fastball? Because all the guys I mentioned, none of them have a great fastball.
Right.
You know, right. They have better sinkers than they have. I'm a little bit worried about Rhett Lauder and who's the other big name that's just coming up? Kumar Rocker.
Oh.
Both of them have arm slots that lead to lower spin efficiency and better sinkers than four seams. And you always have a platoon issue. And you can solve it with a cutter.
Oh, always. You're the cutter. Coming.
Yeah.
2025.
Yeah.
I'm serious. It's going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, every year is the year of the cutter. There's cutters are up. Cutters are up this year.
Well, they are, but everyone's talking about the splitter.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, that's not the
answer. They'll be up again next year.
But no,
and,
I mean,
and it's like the splitter, too, where everyone's like, the cutter hurts your hand. It hurts your, you're going to get hurt. Yeah,
well, okay. So actually, one thing that I hear about that is, all right, I think this is an easy hole to get into, and it can be the answer, but there's a lot that goes into, can a guy throw a pitch, right? And that's something that you can try to, like, bucket and say, okay, you generally have things that are in common with people who can do this. So, like, you know, cool, if you're over the top like this, this means then it was just turn the ball over and there's your slider.
I want to bring Doug Thorburn up here for a second.
Oh, yeah, please, Doug.
It seems like something, I want to ask him a question.
Yeah, Doug Thorburn, everyone.
I feel like Doug knows a lot more about mechanics than I do, and so I wanted to ask Doug.
Come on in.
My question for Doug is just basically this question: is like when we say mechanics that are you know, predisposed to throwing certain pitches, what comes to mind? Like, you know, is it the pronator supinator thing, or like what comes to mind when you think this guy can throw this pitch or this guy can't throw this pitch?
The pronator supinator thing is huge.
Yeah.
And yet it doesn't get enough play. I feel like you guys were talking about it earlier with breaking pitches and with off speed pitches especially. I think with off speed pitches, a lot of guys that can't throw a changeup. I know I personally couldn't throw a changeup, and I was nothing as a pitcher, by the way. But I tried. And I could not throw a changeup because I couldn't get that feel for it, they were saying. That pronation feel. And for me, a splitter worked a lot better because it was the same forearm angle, that fastball forearm angle.
It's the same fingers kind of too, right?
Right. However, but you were saying about crochet. I think it's very personal. Like, crochet is actually a guy that I'm pretty familiar with and knows delivery and has worked with Tom. Hopefully I'm not giving anything away there, but he knows what he's talking about. If it hurts his elbow, he's right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm not going to tell him to do it.
Of course.
But what would you give Crochet? Because he's tried the slider. The cutter was good, but I don't want him to be a two-pitch pitcher. What would you give him?
Well, he needs more vertical. He needs
so more you would work on the slider. You would have him be cutter, slide, like cutter, curve.
Well, different versions of the splitter. There's different ways to throw the splitter. So when he says it hurts him, it's like, well, again, I'm sure
he's
right.
Let's move the seams. Let's move the grip.
How's he doing it?
Let's make it a Fosh. Like, there's like a whole continuum, right? Between a splitter and a Fosh.
Have you seen the Bob Welch fork ball from like back in the 90s, that old 1980 score thing where his fingers are like insane?
Oh, and it's all the way deep in there.
Yeah, I tried going to sleep at night doing that when I was a kid, you know, because I thought that was cool or something. And I threw a split. And it hurt the next day, sure. And I get where people are coming from because you can actually see in the elbow you start going crazy. So it's like if you go for that Bob Welch forkball or that Dave Stewart forkball. Sorry, I was an A's fan back in the day.
Yeah,
that makes a lot of sense. Like that, why that would hurt. But you don't have to do that. You can fork to your level of comfort. And some guys can go wider naturally. And they're more flexible fingers. Some guys can't go as wide. You find that area. You bury it. And the fact is, if you can't get that feel for the pronation, then a lot of times you can keep that fastball forearm angle while being able to throw the split. You get that change of speed. You get the ball down a little bit. But finding that angle that doesn't hurt is really critical. And so I would 100% believe the pitcher. Garrett definitely knows what he's talking about. But at the same time, I want to dispel the myth that the splitter hurts your elbow. Because it's like, well, anything
could hurt
your
one pitcher.
If you do it completely a certain way. Like
the sweeper could.
So yeah, it could. And so like the cutter stuff, it's like, wow, it really depends on how you throw it. And for some guys, yeah, it probably does. I have some guys, I remember playing catch with some guys, it was terrible because I played catch with guys who were way above my grade. And
they had natural cut. And yeah, then they had natural cut and they'd warm up at 85. And for me to even catch a ball at 85 with cut, I wore a few of them. And you know, I look like this. I'm not as good as they are. And to see that cut come out of the hand and to see how much difference that makes naturally for that guy, it's like, okay, so now thanks to pitch design, thanks to our ability to analyze pitches differently, we can say, okay, well, for you, complementing your arsenal, you really need something that goes this way, and because of the way you throw, you separate everything, so it's going to be easier for you to incorporate this into your repertoire.
Right. And that is the cutter, the splitter is sort of the change up for guys who can't pronate, and the cutter is kind of the breaking ball for guys who are more pronators.
Because
you're a little bit more like, just take
cutters for like the fastball for some of these pronators.
Yeah.
So he's got Carlos Rodon. I swear to God, he can't throw anything straight. Like everything he throws has a little bit of yank to it.
Right.
Is that way with Madison Bumgarner, where every single thing he threw had a little bit of bend to it?
Yeah, he was just like bend, more bend.
Right.
You know?
Like that too now.
Yeah.
And so I remember this is back in the day when Brooks Baseball was the place to go to for all the pitch tracking data, and you could never tell his cutter from his fastball. And they started giving the cutter designation, and it was just based off where they divided the lines. It was all of his pitches frame went on.
Anything on this side of the plate was this.
Whatever. How much bend?
You know, they have a lot of random rules like this. So Savant is just like anything with 10 inches of horizontal movement is a sweeper, and that's incorrect because there are sweepers that like go like this. That's a sweeper. The sweeper is one that does not go down. Right, because the seam effects are keeping it up, so they're getting a bunch of slurves, basically, because they're saying anything with 10 inches is a sweeper. So you know, Sonny himself was like, I don't think it's a sweeper. He's like, does it get too much horizontal? It has to be a sweeper. And I'm like, them's the rules. I didn't make them.
Talk to Alex Fast.
Talk to Tom Tango. I didn't do it. He's like, no, I think of it as more just like a slider.
Yeah, what the player calls it and what our systems call it might be different. The systems kind of have to do it based off a certain set of rules so we can all talk the same way.
Yeah, exactly.
That might you know a lot more about what the players call it. And to me, that's what's more important. You can call it
you think
you
so?
Want. I think so.
I'm also an analyst, and sometimes I'm like, I don't care what the player calls it. I just want to be able to analyze this in the right bucket. You know, I just want to put it in the right bucket if I'm analyzing it. It's a cutter? No, it's a fastball. Thank you. You know?
That's so funny. That's interesting. And I can't even say what where I come from in coaching.
No, I get it. I get it from a coach. A coach would say what the player says, right? A coach would say what the player says because that's intent.
Yeah.
And that's how they're thinking about it. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, and to me, it's like, I don't care what you call it. You can call it your whatever. Whatever you think in your mind to be able to throw that pitch, great. We're designing your complimentary set. You know what the 1, 2, and 3 are when the catcher drops it. So you go ahead and just follow the directions, and we're good to go. You know.
So give us an answer to our question we were saying earlier. You got to pick one thing. You get a great four seam with ride and velo. You get a feel for spin. Let's just throw in you're a great supinator with a great changeup. You have to pick one thing to start your pitcher. Which one are you starting with?
I mean, I got to start with velo because it sets the floor for everything else.
Velo in there.
Yeah, what are you doing?
I'm just saying, like, great four seam. Let's go more shape with velo out of it. Great four seam, feel for spin, or great supinator.
The ability to command the four seam, I think, is the most important thing. There are too many pitchers who have their lack of command of the four seam, and you don't often see it in strikeout rates or strike zone rates. Because these guys who pepper the middle of the zone or fall behind in count.
Hunter Green a little bit.
Yeah.
He throws middle a lot on that four seam.
Well, and a lot of guys they basically use their secondaries to set up everything else, and when they miss, they end up 2-0, and then they have to throw up.
That's Hayden Birdsong.
Exactly.
He's not even able to do that.
Yeah.
So it so much of it really depends on the player's repertoire, but I think the fastball command is your starter set for everything else.
Absolutely.
Ladies and gentlemen, Doug Thorburn. Thanks, thank you very much.
Oh, that was awesome.
Yeah.
Huge thanks to Doug for joining us. That conversation a little bit. Did you see Jack Konowitz? You know this guy, Jack Konowitz on the Angels?
You've now said it two different ways in Konowitz. Two tries.
Konowitz? Konowitz.
It's a huh?
Konowitz.
It's a CH.
I know, Konowitz.
Well, you might know better than I would. Is it? I mean, But doesn't it look
kind of,
doesn't it look kind of like a Polish last name?
I'm not Polish.
No?
No.
You're German.
I'm a lot of things.
Oh, I thought there was German.
It's a Welsh, it's a Welsh last name, Pollock.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. You're thinking of a very bad term for
I know,
Pollock.
Yeah.
That is not my last name.
Yeah,
right.
I know. But, you know, I thought they just changed it when they came over.
No.
No, I thought you were German. I thought you were German Polish.
No, I have some Austrian.
Okay.
But last anyway, Kahanowicz, anyway, he throws about
Kahanowicz looks like a Polish last name.
Well, he throws sinkers a lot.
Okay.
You know, okay.
I haven't looked at him because I haven't thought he was any
so,
good.
Well, it's so interesting. Well, he's in dying art. He threw like 80% sinkers yesterday, and he went through six innings shutout.
I don't believe in it.
Well, I don't either, but he throws them at 96 and he throws along the edges, and it's like, that is a way to succeed in baseball. If you have movement and you go along the edges with sinkers, like, we've seen that before from guys.
I mean, I grew up in Atlanta. That was...
Do I... Am I...
That was what they preached.
Am I saying this is going to be great forever? No. But to see a guy actually succeed with it is cool. You know, that's a ticket to getting a win in baseball.
It's like, you know... Put it in the glass case and...
He has a 17% fly ball rate. And he's in a league of home runs. 17% home run rate. No, I don't believe it either.
Okay.
Like, I'm not saying that he's going to be like a 3 ERA or something.
Well, it is interesting. His sinkers are up this year and everyone's talking about, you know, are the sinkers... Seems to have to weigh sinkers. Is that the new thing? And
Sure. I guess what I'm getting at is the art of, like, he doesn't just chuck it down the middle home for the best. Like, he actually does keep it low in arm side when he wants to, and then is able to go inside a lefty.
That is such a throwback, dude.
Exactly. And it's like, in the majors, that can work. And it's so, you know, we talk all the time, the Jared Jones types, the, you know, the big stuff, all that. And yet, there's this other class of guys that can succeed. And it's really cool to see, like, oh, yeah, this is just a 70% sinker baller that works.
I also just don't trust the Angels at all. I'm just Caden Gannon. Probably bad. I don't know yet. He's probably bad.
He's just a sinker. Jack of one trade.
Yeah.
You know? That's
it. No, I don't know how much to do that. Because I do think that bad teams can still produce good pitchers by accident.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
You know, so, like, Caden Dana could be good. I just don't trust the Angels to do it right.
He looks like a little mini Thor. Just throws
mini
a little
Thor?
Softer.
Yeah.
It's a little annoying. I want him to throw harder.
Well, I am excited. Caden Dana this weekend and the Italian.
Samuel, yeah. I got the Samuel part.
Yeah.
You got the last thing. The lefty kind of reminds me of Lodolo from what I've seen on video.
I have a question for Justin Mason here.
Oh, Justin Mason's here, everybody.
Yeah,
he's coming
on
up. Justin Mason.
All right, Justin. I got a question for you.
Yeah.
Which pitcher this year has... offended you the most? Which pitcher has turfed your teams? Which pitcher has just taken a big old poop on your team and made you the most angry?
The most angry.
Yeah.
Really...
Who do you have the most shares of that you were most wrong on? And are you going to be right next year? You still believe?
That's a really good question because, I mean, I'm not trying to, like, sound bragging, but my pitching's actually been really
I don't have any of those.
Thanks for listening to us.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, that's funny. So Eno and I are in the Barf League, which is the Bay Area.
Oh, yeah.
League,
right.
And Eno is winning that league, but it is not because of his pitching. His offense is so good.
So Ellie De La Cruz, baby.
Yeah. Over-invested in hitting, though, in the draft. Now.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I went.
I have good enough pitching. I'm in top 10 in this thing.
Yeah. But I've got just amazing pitching. So I think, like, lately, Simeon Woods Richardson has really started to hit that rookie wall. And I haven't gotten from under those shares quickly enough. I was just talking to Paul about him, actually, this morning. And I was like, you know, this is a guy, like, I really like him. I think he's going to be a really interesting innings eater down stretch. I know you don't like that kind of pitcher because he doesn't figure into 10 and 12 team leagues.
He actually, Simeon Woods Richardson has been decent enough for 12 teams as streamers here
but
and there, yeah.
Over his last, like, 5-6 starts, you can really just tell he doesn't command things as well.
Mm.
His control is starting to go. And I think he's just thrown so many innings.
He's tired.
At the major level, but he's tired. He's not used to being built up. So, like, that's one of those guys where I'm going to be back in on him next year because he'll be more built up. I trust the Twins as an organization. And I think
doesn't
he's
he have
those...
kind of a unique fastball? Like, doesn't he have weird metrics on his fastball?
Yeah, I mean, it's not really a dominating fastball, but what I really want from you right now, Eno, is to say the name at the same time for both of us. The guy who's messed us up the most this year.
Bobby Miller?
Bobby Miller. Yeah. I mean, if you guys were in Arizona with us, it was Eno shouting into the mic saying, everybody drop Bobby Miller!
I said I would crack Bobby Miller and spread him all over my chest. I don't know what that means, but I think I was into him. That was a good time.
Right. Yeah, I mean, for the most part, I think my pitching has done very well. I'd love to hear you guys talk about Spencer Schwalenbach, because that was a guy that I kind of identified at the end of the first half as he's been really, really unlucky, but the stuff seems really, really good. I like the command and control. And I was like, he's on a good team that's going to get a lot of win potential. And so he was a guy I bought in really hard in right at the halfway point of the season. And he's been fantastic. Is this a guy you guys believe in for the next year?
Yes. Mr. Crescendo, Schwalenbach. Swell. It's fine.
That is bad.
Oh, he's so good.
He's so bad at that.
Except I'm not. And the fastball is kind of bad, though. It's like, honestly, the biggest issue I see with Schwalenbach is that his fastball has too much drop on it, and he uses it in situations where he allows guys to get hits. It's incredibly frustrating. Even when he executes it right up top, it gets hit there. It's like, oh, man, but you have a cutter. And I remember watching his first start. We talked on the show about, I think it was AJ Smith-Shawver and Hurston Waldrep and Spencer Schwalenbach. I think we collectively said, like, yes, Schwalenbach is the guy that we like most.
Yeah, we like him, yeah.
And, oh, man, it's so rare to see a guy come up and have 4 to 5 pitches that he actually throws for strikes with mid-90s velocity, a high swinging strike rate, and on a winning team.
Yeah, and I don't know that his fastball is that bad. He was talking about how he's a former shortstop that throws from this, like, sort of Michael Givens-esque, like, kind of out here, kind of former shortstop thing. And then he's used seam effects on the fastball to cut the sideways movement. So batters see this arm slot, and they think this ball is going to go like this.
Right.
And he cuts that so that it only goes like this, and they see it as straighter than the numbers sort of say it. So I think the fastball is really interesting. He throws really close to his maximum velocity, and he's a one TJ guy, so I just don't know what the health looks like long term.
Really, actually,
and then his schedule is not amazing. At Philadelphia versus LA Dodgers, and then at Cincinnati in his next. So just down the stretch, I'm worried, but actually that might keep him cheaper for next year. So I kind of want to keep his ERA over 4.
He did so well against the Phillies, though.
Yeah.
Like, he's done well against good teams. Schwalenbach is a rare guy that has multiple things to throw. The cutter inside the lefties is what sold me.
Yeah.
Even in that first game, he actually got hit by one of them. I was like, that's not supposed to happen.
But here's the thing that was really the most surprising on what he said was, he's cutting his four-seam to get rid of that fade, right?
Uh-huh.
So he's cutting his four-seam, he throws a cutter, and he throws a slider.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, man, like, I hope the feel for spin is legit, and, like, you can handle this. And I did ask him if he spends a lot of time trying to keep those pitches separate. And he said that they throw 12 pitches in every bullpen. So he has 12 pitches to separate all those breaking balls.
And he's good. And he throws a splitter. Not as his number two pitch.
As his, like, last pitch.
Yes! If it's there, it's there. Great. If it's not, he doesn't need it.
Yeah.
That's how you're supposed to have a splitter. That's the good
He doesn't even practice that in this 12 pitches.
Doesn't need to. He just knows if it shows up or not. It's good. Justin Mason. One.
Justin Mason, everybody.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. Of course. So good having you. We've got about 5 minutes left or so, so I do want to do a trivia question. And I had it prepared before, and I realized I already gave it away, which is just wonderful.
Oh.
It's a great thing.
Do I need to come up with a trivia question?
No, I'll take one more question, actually, in the meantime, while we do that. Anyone has one more question? Quick hit. Yeah, right here, please. We hear DJ Hurst from the crowd. What's your name?
Igor.
DJ Hurst. Hurst. Oh, my gosh.
I didn't do that one.
He's a cherry bomb. No, what's really cool about Hurst is that in his last couple starts, his changeup has been a lot better. He's someone that I remember actually in the preseason, I think I called him the best Nationals hit pitcher, save for Mackenzie Gore, but even then might still be the best one. He wasn't even in the rotation yet because everyone else was just so whatever. And hers has had a minor league career of actually succeeding really high with his four-seamer. It's not the biggest velocity, but I think that works when his changeup is actually working too. And the last start was the best command I've seen with him. Four-seamers up and into right-handers, which I think is the number one trait I want to see in a lefty. If you can throw that across your body, up and into a righty with a four-seamer, beautiful. That sets up everything. The slider underneath, the changeup away from there, all of it.
Tell me about his command, though. It's not good.
Well, it goes back and forth. And the thing is, Kyle Bodie has said many a time, hey, first-year command, always weird. You shouldn't really lean on that. I remember from hers, I could be remembering
all
correctly.
All I've got is great changeup, though. You're saying there's other pitches that are
good. Well, the four-seamer has been the pitch that's gotten the whiffs for him and performed. It's when the changeup shows up that it all of a sudden accelerates. And honestly, this is a lefty changeup league.
Cherry bomb. He's just going to be really hard to own. I think in Dynasties is a good guy to maybe pick up and like hope that he becomes more consistent, but I don't see the consistency just yet. So definitely the upside is there. And I, you know, the pitch, like he's saying, I mean, I'm saying the same thing as he's saying, but I've got a trivia question.
Oh, you do? Okay, what we got?
Give me here.
All right. So we got a signed baseball from me and Eno. What does yours say?
Mine has my favorite fantasy league name on it. It's a perm. What does yours say?
No splitters!
Sign ball. The question is, who this year has the best rated by Stuff Plus knuckle curve in baseball this year? Minimum 30 innings.
Shout
30
it out
innings.
If you know it.
Hunter Brown?
It's not Hunter Brown. Ooh.
Shout it loud.
Huh? Nope. It's going to be a little surprising.
I mean, it's not. I don't want to answer it.
Don't you?
I want the ball.
Here, you get the ball. Who? Nope.
Oh, that's not a bad guess. I mean, there's a guy that has had it multiple.
Well,
multiple
see, no
years.
One's even said the second best one yet.
I mean, that would be.
Think of like the best curveball and one of the best curveballs in baseball. That's second.
NL East. Not Wheeler.
Oh, Nola?
Nola's second.
Good, okay.
Nola's second.
That's the big. I couldn't hear you.
You said Nola. Oh, sorry. Nola's
second. Who's first?
Hunter Brown is fifth. Ben Brown is fourth. Oh.
He is currently hurt.
Yeah, the guy who's number one is currently hurt.
He's currently hurt.
Huh?
What division?
AL East. Known more, does not have a good four-seamer.
I think he...
That's really a sweeper.
Remember when I was talking about the archetype, the Michael King archetype that's like cutter? Remember that I was talking about the Michael King archetype, cutter, sinker?
He's one of those.
He's a Michael King archetype.
Yes.
Huh?
Nope. Oh, wait, I think I just heard it. Who said it?
Clark Schmidt!
There we go! Who is that? Is that Jake Crumpler?
Hey!
Jake, who got it? Jake Crumpler, the First Pitch Podcast, got it.
Yeah.
Eno, we're coming up to the end of this. Thank you, the hundreds of people who are here.
Anybody have a towel? I need a towel.
Bye. What are you working on right now? What's going on?
What am I? I'm not working on anything. I just put my rankings up, thank God.
Oh, possible to do
that. And I channeled my inner Nick Pollock. What I did was... No.
Oh, okay.
I mostly got rid of all the injured people.
Yes!
And because there's 5 weeks left in the season.
Yeah.
The other thing I did was I put the schedule in every single one of their blurbs.
Yes!
So that you could look at the player and be like, oh, these are their upcoming things.
How much time that takes?
Next
you?
Year, a lot.
I know, right?
Oh, next year, what I want to do is maybe highlight the two start weeks with like an asterisk or something.
Yeah, we were
so
thinking about
that.
Like we're making a whole sit start tool.
But it's
tool
so hard because it's all out the window now. The Reds called up Rhett Lauder and changed their whole thing. The Angels called up their two guys.
So
it's all out the window.
We do it like by team so that you can slot in that guy and then maybe push it mentally and see what the schedule still would be.
Yeah,
it's
surprising how many guys on the same team will have like. Because it's three game, you know, you have a five man rotation,
right,
in 3-game series,
oh, yeah,
you'll have guys that just miss Baltimore, you know, and you're just like, oh, I'd like to miss Baltimore, you know, the whole team goes to Fenway, but this one pitcher doesn't pitch.
Ryan Nelson's missing the Dodgers.
Yeah, exactly. Oh,
yes. So
sometimes,
thank you so much.
Sometimes you think, hey, oh, these guys are going to play the Dodgers.
A good example of a good fastball and nothing else.
Nothing else.
Nothing else. And nothing else. Maybe actually I'm really in because maybe that cutter comes alive. All, like, this is just to put a pin in the whole mechanics thing. If you, my whole theory is if you can get a guy that has a really good fastball and a good delivery on it, do not throw anything that requires you to just do anything but change the grip.
Right.
Just that's just what that that's what Garrett Crochet does
that's
with the cutter.
Splitter and the cutter.
Just like
and
same release every single
and
time.
And another thing that just came to me is we're talking about Ryan Nelson. We were talking about the industry trends and the game's trends. Does Ryan Nelson become more viable? Does Jack Angels guy
Konowitz
become more viable in a league where no one's throwing fastballs?
Yeah.
If everyone's throwing like 30% fastballs and you're throwing 70% fastballs, our hitters just like, I'm not prepared for this.
Right, so right.
I don't,
exactly.
I don't know, maybe.
Yeah.
That seems to be the only thing I can explain Ryan Nelson's success with.
No. Well, anyway, that's going to do it for this episode of The Craft. Thank you all so much for joining us here live, watching at home, and of course, listening after. On behalf of Enosaurus, my name is Nick Pollock, and we'll talk about The Craft of Pitching again next week. Thank you all.
Thanks, guys.
Bye. Goodbye.